we have to realize and teach kids that life is a marathon and it's not a sprint. And that what we're after in our kids' lives is a lifetime of success, not today's home run.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and we have not one, but two extraordinary guests to share with you today. First, let me introduce Dr. Harley Rotbart. He is a nationally renowned parenting expert, pediatrician, speaker, and educator. He has served on the advisory board of Parents Magazine, Parents.com, and Children's Health Magazine. Dr. Harley's national media appearances include The Dr. Oz Show, CBS, The Early Show, NPR, Coast to Coast, USA Today, Parents Magazine, Time Magazine, U.S. News and World Report, countless other sources as well, radio programs, podcasts, you name it, he's been there. Also with us today, Ken Davidoff, a veteran baseball journalist with more than 25 years covering Major League Baseball and a former president of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Davidoff has been a prominent voice in baseball media, appearing on ESPN, MLB Network, YES Network, CNN, and other national outlets. His reporting career spanned daily coverage of the Yankees, Mets, and league-wide storylines from 1995 through 2022. But they're both here today to talk about their newest book, 101 Lessons from the Dugout, What Baseball and Softball Can Teach Us About the Game of Life. Hailed by baseball greats like Mr. October Reggie Jackson, legendary New York Yankee Bernie Williams, and several others who everybody would know, this is a must-read for young players and fans of the game, their parents, coaches. My goodness, we have a lot to talk about. Dr. Harley, Ken Davidoff, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is outstanding to have you both with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Absolutely. There's so much we can talk about. I mentioned on air, as a lifelong Braves fan, having somebody, Ken, who has covered the New York baseball teams is a little painful for me at times when I think back to 1996. But in all seriousness, the book you guys have written is fantastic. And whether you're a parent or not, you probably know somebody who is. So this is going to be an episode to tune into. So what I want to do first, Ken, I'll start with you. Talk to us about why you guys decided to write this book and why now?
Richard, so I want to make clear, this book is Harley's baby. Harley came up with this in the caverns of his brilliant mind. And Harley was generous enough to invite me to be his collaborator. And because the different perspectives we brought, Harley having spent his entire professional life with young people and their parents and understanding that mindset, and then me covering the game of baseball at the highest level for about three decades. So I was just honored to be a collaborator in this project. I just loved the positive, sweet, reinforcing nature of this book.
Perfectly said. Harley, then I will hand that baton to you, and I should have given you the baton first. I apologize. So Harley, tell us why you wrote 101 Lessons from the Dugout.
As Ken said, it's a collaborative effort, but the germ of the idea really came from my years in the dugout. I coached youth baseball for a long time, from T-ball all the way through high school, 8 years at the high school level. And as that process was going on, I realized that so much of what we see on the baseball diamond, and of course on the softball diamond, they're similar diamonds, applies to the rest of life. And I was able, during all those years, to work with some troubled kids. And I was able to use analogies and metaphors that came to mind because they were also playing ball for me that I hope helped them. And it actually even extended to the clinic where there were patients who needed a better way of understanding how to cope with the crises in their lives, their health crises, their family crises. And it turns out that baseball has just about everything to help kids get through tough times. And over the years, I began putting these little ideas down on scraps of paper and then finally tried to put it all together. And I needed the expertise of Ken Davidoff to help me bring it to fruition.
How did you land on 101?
So the book is broken down into five different parts. And coincidentally, after finding bits and pieces from the dugout, from the pitching mound, from the batting cage, from the base paths, it turned out that there were about 101 different vignettes, scenarios. And there might have been 98. I fudged it to get to 101 because it's just such a nice number. And there might have been 102, and I may have cut it down to 101. But 101 seems to be the metric that so many people use for conveying important messages. And so I rounded up or down and got to 101.
Perfect. We won't ask you to reveal what those 102 and 103 were. So, you know, Ken, you know, you've covered baseball, as we talked about, at the highest level. When Harley came to you and said, I want to do this, what did you feel that you'd be able to bring from watching the Yankees and Mets and all these other Major League Baseball teams play for several decades?
At the risk of not sounding humble, Richard, I would say expertise, you know, like having seen these 101 elements at the very highest level and just offering different take. And like, I just thought our viewpoints complemented each other so nicely and we benefited from each other. But yeah, there were times when I said to Harley, yeah, I think maybe let's try something a little different here. And we had like very fruitful discussions. And I've said before, like, I honestly never got annoyed or angry. Like, I was just always like, if anything, I would laugh because I just loved Harley's spirit. But I think that's hopefully what the book shows is the benefits of these two perspectives that are not opposites, but just kind of tangential.
So let's jump into the book then, because I'm excited about this. Obviously, we're not going to go through all 101 on the show, but you said you've kind of got some of these from the dugout, some of these from the pitching mound. So, Harley, talk to us about how this is organized, and then I want to get into some of your favorite lessons from the dugout, because I think there's so much there, and people really want to know, during times like this, how can we apply some things from people who executed at a very high level, sports, whether you're playing Little League or whether you're playing Major League Baseball, you're talking about human performance, succeeding under pressure. We're all under a lot of pressure right now. So I'm excited to dig into this content with you guys.
Well, thanks, Dr. Richard. It was a natural organization for the book because there are obviously different elements, a good word that Ken just used, different elements on the pitcher's mound and different elements in the batting box, batter's box, and in the dugout before the game ever starts and after the game as the coaches are wrapping things up, also in the dugout. There are different elements in each of those stages, and it sort of occurred to me that each of those different stages of a game present different opportunities for teaching. So, for example, kids going through crisis in their lives are facing curveballs. And those curveballs are tough when you're in the batter's box, but they're even tougher in life. And when life takes a turn that you don't expect, understanding that there are curveballs. Sometimes curveballs occur in life. There are opportunities for seeing what comes next in your life when you're standing on the on-deck circle. There is a window into the pitcher, a window into the umpire. And in real life, seeing what happened to kids in class before you, years ahead of you, perhaps, or even in your same class, when they did things that resulted in circumstances that you may or may not want to duplicate, you're in the on-deck circle. You're able to watch other people go through what you're about to go through and benefit by that on-deck experience in life and in baseball. And Ken has heard me say this too many times now, but there was a great example of Chapter 92, one of my favorites and now one of Ken's favorites, that just happened in the World Series, where this ace Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher, Yoshi Yamamoto, was caught cleaning up the dugout when everybody else had left at the end of a game where he had pitched a complete game. The Dodgers won the game, a complete game, and Yoshi Yamamoto is in the dugout picking up the scraps of debris that his teammates had left before he left the dugout. And the lesson there is, and was written before we ever saw pitcher Yamamoto doing this. This was in the book, Chapter 92. Clean up your messes today. Don't leave them for tomorrow. And that applies to not just your dugout when you're playing baseball, but it applies to your desk, and it applies to your homework, and it applies to your family situation. Whatever messes you have today, clean them up so you don't have to deal with them tomorrow. And Yoshi Yamamoto did that. So that became belatedly one of my favorite chapters.
Give us a few of your other favorite chapters. I love that story.
So the pop fly is probably the most dreaded play in youth baseball, because it almost always results in a crash or in a drop ball. I mean, the pop fly is sometimes caught, but it's oftentimes dropped because whoever thinks they're going to catch it doesn't. And the people who think that somebody else is going to catch it, they don't move forward. And so the pop fly is a perfect example of first taking responsibility in life. You call for it. You call for the pop fly. But also, once you call for it, you got to follow through. You can't back away. And so the pop fly is an example of taking responsibility and finishing what you started and what you promised to do. There's the risk and reward of leading off base. When you take a lead off, you run a risk. You could get picked off. But there's also great reward because you get a head start to the next goal in your life. And that's true off the diamond as well. There are things that you have to take a chance, but you have to be cautious in the chance you take so you don't get picked off in real life. So it's those kinds of examples. Ken has, I think, perfected the discussion of the fielder's choice. Ken, I'll let you do the fielder's choice.
Perfect.
I was on deck, ready to talk about that one, actually. Yeah, the fielder's choice, I just love the intricacy of it and how easily it translates over. So, you know, let's say you're in the field and your team is leading by 4 runs and the other team has first and second, you know, no outs. What do you do? Well, you're up by 4 runs, just get an out. You know, if you get the out at first, that's okay. If the other two runners advance to second and third. But now, same situation, but instead of up by 4 runs, you're up by 1 run. Get that out at third, you know, get the lead out because you need to protect that lead. So your priorities change depending on the situation. And now you take that over to the classroom. You know, let's say chemistry is my hardest class and I'm acing chemistry. I got an A. So, okay, tonight I have homework in 5 subjects. I don't have to go nuts with chemistry. You know, I can work evenly on all my classes, just complete my homework adequately all across the board. But now let's say I have a C in chemistry. You got to get that lead out. You got to get the runner at third. You know, you got to focus on chemistry because you're in a bit of a hole here.
I'm loving these analogies, and there's something I'm thinking about, and this is perfect because, Ken, as you know, I don't think there's any profession where there's a higher degree of accountability, certainly from the public perception, than sports, right? Like, you know, I think about Bill Buckner, right? He's still being, you know, he was held accountable for forever after what happened, you know, when he botched that out in the World Series. And so sports, there's a high degree of accountability because your teammates don't hold you accountable. Certainly the media will, right? One of the things that has been said a lot is that in the last couple decades, so Harley, I'm not kind of pointing this to you as a parenting expert, that there has increasingly been a lack of accountability in the youth of today. And to an extent, parents as well. You know, teachers complain that kids don't want to do what they're supposed to do. And then when the teachers go to the parents and complain about the kids not doing what they're supposed to do during parent-teacher conferences, the parents go wild and kids aren't held accountable. So on one hand, we have sports and baseball in particular, where there's an extreme degree of accountability. And this perception that many hold that there is a remarkable lack of accountability in the younger people in our country today, if not Western society at large. So how do we reconcile those things, and how can some of the lessons from the dugout help with that?
Dr. Richard, those are the most important questions I think we could ask about today's youth. And that is, how do we turn kids into responsible adults? And I think part of the answer there has to do with participation trophies and the fact that we tend to boost ego and positively reinforce, even when positive reinforcement may not be appropriate. And in fact, some reprimanding, some tough love might be more appropriate. And I think that we've gotten to the point now where we are so, as parents, and I'm a parent and a grandparent, and as coaches, we've gotten to the point where we're afraid to be negative. And the real world has negativity in it. And it has a role for being accountable for when you do something wrong. You should be held accountable and you should be told that you've done something wrong in a gentle, loving way, but you need to be told. And that is true throughout the baseball game as well, where there are chapters in here on helpful advice and not helpful advice. An example of not helpful advice in baseball is the coach yelling at the pitcher or the parents yelling at the pitcher, just throw strikes, just throw strikes. Well, the pitcher's not trying to throw balls. The pitcher is trying to throw strikes. That's not helpful advice. The helpful constructive advice is calm down, concentrate, relax. It's just a game. Look at the catcher, throw to the mitt. You're fine. That's positive advice. And I think that what we need to do is reinforce the positive, but also explain the negative in a helpful advisory role rather than in a sort of curt and unhelpful, you know, just tell the batter, just swing at strikes. Well, of course, he's going to try to do that. Or, you know, you got ducks on the palm, there are runners on base. That's not helpful to tell the batter. He knows that. The pressure is already there. On the other hand, when the batter is up there only for himself, and he is trying to hit the home run when all he needs is to put down a single, it's okay to tell the batter then also that we don't need the showboating. This is not about your statistics. And it's true in life too, where when we see our kids doing things that seem to be selfish, seem to be inappropriate, we need to tell them, just hit the single. You don't need to showboat here.
Ken, any thoughts you'd love to add to that? I'm loving this conversation.
I think Harley nailed that pretty good. And that's why I love hearing Harley's perspective, having, you know, served on the ground, on the grassroots level for all these years.
Hey, guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. I want to talk about another thing that has come up a lot, and a lot of this has to do with how technology has molded our attention spans and reduced them significantly. You see this in college football. Now there's a transfer portal where the whole sport becomes a free agent every season at the end of the season. So sports historically involves tremendous dedication. You know, the research pretty consistently has shown us if you want to master any skill, you've got to put in 10,000 hours. That is a lot of hours, right? But we're an instant gratification society. And here again, we're talking about something very dichotomous where there's a lot of people that, you know, they want to be able to hit 300 now. They want to be able to have a lot of money now. They want to be able to have all these things. But due to social media and a whole lot of other factors in society, we've really shifted to this instant gratification world where, again, sports exists in that bubble where that's generally not the case. So what would you say to that, Dr. Harley?
We are, as parents, as coaches, we are responsible for that. We have to realize and teach kids that life is a marathon and it's not a sprint. And that what we're after in our kids' lives is a lifetime of success, not today's home run. The batter hits a ground ball through the infield and he rounds first base and he, for his statistics, wants a double. But what's important in that game is base runners, because you're down by a run or two, and getting thrown out at second base hurts the team. So the instant gratification of a double in your stats box is harmful, not just to yourself, because you will be the GOAT and not in the G period, O period, A period, T period, but the GOAT as opposed to the opposite of hero. You'll be the GOAT. You'll suffer for it, but your team will suffer for it too. It would be gratifying to get a double from that through the whole ground ball, but it doesn't help. And the marathon in life is you want to win the game. You want to get through the whole game. And when base runners are important, you can't go for instant gratification. And that's true in everything in the rest of your life. If you choose the shortcut, if you choose the easy way to get acclaim, the easy way to be popular, you're going to make a mistake. And popularity is a goal of many people seeking instant gratification. They want to be popular, but it comes at a price. And Ken, you're up.
Yeah, see, this is interesting, Dr. Rich, because this is where I think I bring a different perspective, and not again, not opposite, but tangential. Like, I've seen these college players, how they used to just get exploited fully, right? Like how, you know, I'm going to play for this coach, and then the coach, you know, a week later would say, oh, sorry, I got a better offer at X university. Good luck to you. And the player is trapped. So now we've seen kind of a 180-degree swing where the player can say, oh, in that case, I'm leaving. I do think there should be some constraints on the transfer portal, but I am glad the transfer portal exists. Now, I think the lessons of this book can still very much apply to this modern sports world. You know, I still think you have good teammates and accountable teammates and teamwork, even in a world, as we discussed, I'm a University of Michigan graduate and fan. Even when guys are constantly leaving and arriving, you can still, I think these values are still fundamental.
They are. There's something else I've been thinking about, and Ken, I want to stay with you. Many years ago, I had Molly Fletcher, the super agent, on this show. I think John Smoltz was one of her clients, Doc Rivers, other people. And I recall her talking about the average person sitting at home watching a baseball game cannot fathom the pressure that these guys are under, to say nothing of the game, but on top of what they have in their regular lives, that they have to find a way to shut that out and focus on the game. The research is pretty clear, and especially post-COVID, that young people in this country have a higher degree of emotional distress. They feel overwhelmed. They feel that pressure than any other time in history. It's pretty alarming what those statistics show. So I want to ask you first, Ken, and then Harley, I'm going to roll to you. Having watched Major League Baseball at this level, what were the common themes of how top baseball players handled pressure?
how they do the best athletes, the best ball players, handle pressure by somehow blocking it out when they show up for work. And one of my favorite stories that I've been repeating in our little junket here is there was a very famous game in New York, Yankees-Mets 2009. The Mets had a second baseman named Luis Castillo. And there was a game, a Friday night game. Mets were winning by one run, one out to go. Yankees had two runners on base. Alex Rodriguez, who you've heard of, his a towering pop fly. And the game should have ended. Mets should have won. Instead, it hit Luis Castillo's glove, fell to the ground. The Yankees won the game because their runners were running on two outs. And so just like that, from Mets win to Mets loss. And Luis Castillo answered the media's questions that night. I mean, huge, you know, tabloid back pages, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a quick turnaround the next day, Saturday day game. And I remember standing in that Mets clubhouse at Yankee Stadium waiting for Luis Castillo to come in. How was he going to deal with this, you know, this pressure, you know, this, you know, being punched in the face metaphorically? And he showed up with a smile, joking around, talked to the media, talked about how he was dealing with the big headlines, and went out and had a terrific game and helped the Mets win. So that's the best way. And that's, we have that in our book about just blocking out the pressure. And it's easier said than done, but that's what the best are able to do.
Arlie, I'm going to let you add to that. That was a great story.
And I can't top that except to say that as this show is taping, as your podcast is taping, the Winter Olympics are going on. And there is tremendous discussion about the pressure that athletes feel throughout sport. But there was a great discussion that Simone Biles had with Michaela Schifrin. So Simone Biles, of course, is the greatest gymnast maybe of all time. And Michaela Schifrin is for sure the greatest downhill skier of all time. And the two of them are having a discussion about how to handle the pressure. And Simone Biles and Michaela Schifrin both crashed due to the pressure. They both succumbed to the terrible pressure, and they both found ways of dealing with that pressure. And at the youth baseball level, Luis Castilla is a prime example, but at the youth baseball level, where I'm watching kids from the dugout, I'll tell you that the pressure is coming from their parents. It is, the kids would love to drive in the run, but the parents are somehow vicariously living through their kids' baseball and softball experiences to the detriment of their kids. And their kids are not going to be major league ball players, just like they were not major league ball players. And you've got to, it's so cliche, but you got to find the fun. And what Simone Biles told Michaela Schifrin is, it's just another ski slope. Just remember how much fun skiing is when you're coming down that slalom. And again, spoiler alert, but by now everyone knows, Michaela Schifrin won the gold. After crashing in 2022, she had no medals. And this year she came back and won the gold again. And the secret to that is remembering the fun in life. And for kids outside of baseball and outside of sports, there's too much fun to let the pressure of the rest of your lives bash you down. And I think we can learn from Castilla, and I think we can learn from Schifrin, and I think we can learn from Biles.
I want to take this in a little different trajectory because, you know, Ken, you had said that when top athletes, these baseball players, are facing extreme pressure, in that moment, they can block it out. Harley, you talked about, at least at a youth level, allowing kids to remember to have fun. Obviously, you know, these techniques are useful in the moment, right? You're on the pitcher's mound, you've got three balls, two strikes, block everything out, get that last out, and go back to the dugout. But we know, and certainly science speaks to this, that there are things you can't take all your stress and worries and just lock them away forever and not expect to have psychological issues in the form of anxiety and depression, the physiological stuff that comes with that, which I know you could talk to, Dr. Harley. So in terms of dealing with big things in life that are causing you emotional distress, say significant anxiety, significant depression, what are some things that baseball can teach us to help with that?
Every game comes to an end. And I think it's important to realize that the game will end. And at the end of the game, there'll be a winning team and there'll be a losing team. And then the next day, the sun will rise and there'll be another game. You know, all the classic interview of the football player on the sideline or the baseball player or the, you know, during the high pressure World Series is we're going to just take one game at a time. But, you know, that's real. That being able to take one game at a time is a really useful and meaningful concept. And if you can do that, you are going to be left with some scars from the day before, but there's another game the next day. It's hard to realize it when you're in the moment. It's hard to appreciate when you've dropped the pop fly that could have won the game for your team, or you struck out with the bases loaded and you could have won the game for your team, or you're Billy Buckner and the ball goes through your legs. It's very hard to realize there's a game the next day, but there is a game the next day. And at the more serious level, Dr. Richard, I think you can help kids deal with anxiety and you can help adults deal with anxiety with professional help. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say to a parent that your child is under way too much pressure. And parenthetically, it's because of you sometimes, but I think it's you, the parent, but I think it would be helpful for your child to talk to someone in a really non-threatening way. And I think we can offer that. And school counselors don't charge. I think you can talk to a school counselor.
Well said. Ken, I'm sure you've got a story from baseball that you could
throw. The one lesson that stands out is my last year of Little League, I was 15 years old. And the one thing I could do is catch a fly ball. Couldn't hit to save my life, but I could catch a fly ball. So I didn't start. I was on the Twins, North Edison Little League, New Jersey, and never started unless, you know, enough guys didn't show up. And so this game, it was against the Colts, who were also a very good team. And so I came in the game probably fourth, fifth inning, played right field, tight game. We're up probably one or two, and a scalding line drive, like a righty hitter, so opposite field, scalding line drive right at me. And I catch it because I was adept at that. And just the appreciation that my teammates showed me just made my day, you know. And I remember I got one of the special patches after the game from Mr. Kupo, the manager, you know, for the best plays. So that idea of you know, resilience and again, you should, like our chapter two is the lineup. You show up at the field and you're not in the starting lineup. How do you respond? So 15-year-old me was okay with, well, I'm just going to play my role in right field and catch the ball in the fifth inning. And I went home that day feeling great.
Guys, before I move to close, is there any chapter, anything you want, you're dying to talk about that I haven't addressed?
I love the keeping score chapter, which is, I think, chapter one of the book. And that chapter talks about what does and does not make it into the scorebook. And it talks about the scorebook of baseball, but it also talks about the scorebook of life. What makes it into the scorebook is what Ken just described, catching a fly ball. The fly ball is caught, it's scored in the scorebook, looks like any other fly ball. What's not in the scorebook is the fly ball that is caught because of a running, diving, at the fence, leaping catch. It's that catch, which just is recorded in the scorebook, keeping score. It's just recorded as a caught fly ball. But in the minds of the fans and the players and the coaches who saw that happen, it's recorded there forever. And just as Ken just described, he was 15 years old. And that catch is still recorded in his brain.
And now I'm 18.
And now he's 18. And so keeping score, chapter one, keeping score is, are you going to do what it takes? Give 110% every time, every opportunity in your life. Try your best. Make the best out of every opportunity. Or if it's a tough catch, you're going to let it drop in the outfield and it's just another drop ball. So you have the opportunity in life to give 110% to make the diving heroic catch. It won't be in the scorebook, but you'll know it. Everybody around you will know it. and you'll be appreciated for what you've done. And that extends so far beyond just the baseball and softball fields.
Fantastic. Guys, I have loved our conversation. And as you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guest a single question. So that means you each get a shot at this. What is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
For me, it is that the future of our country, the future of our world, rests with our kids. And what we do today with our kids will define not only their lives, but the lives of their kids and their kids' kids. And it's really critical that we, as a society, nurture our kids for the betterment of their own lives and for the betterment of society. And it's really with that motive that 101 Lessons for the Dugout was written. And that is, we want to make a better world by making our kids' lives better.
Outstanding. Ken, what about you? You get to follow that, right?
Well, I'm going to follow it. Just imagine we're in a nice restaurant and Harley just cooked up the most brilliant meal you've ever eaten. And now you get a cute little cookie to take home at the end. So I'm the cute little cookie. That's, you know, what I'm going to say. So I'm lowering the bar for myself. But I guess what sticks out, like a chapter 29, hit by the pitch, courage, bouncing back. And to build on what Harley said, things that we're in a tough world right now. My goodness, you know, far tougher for our kids and Harley's grandkids than for us growing up. But we somehow have to impart the value of resilience of, you know, you're going to take your hits. You're going to drop the pop flies. You're going to, you know, not be in the starting lineup. You're not going to make the school play or win the school election, or, you know, worse things are going to happen to your family or your friends. But like, we just have to impart the value of resilience.
Words to live by. That was more than just a little cute cookie to take home, Ken. You don't give yourself enough credit. The book is called 101 Lessons from the Dugout, What Baseball and Softball Can Teach Us About the Game of Life. It's available everywhere books are sold, but we'll have a link to it in the show notes. Gentlemen, of course, people want to read the book, but if they want to learn more about each of you individually, or I should say both of you individually, where can they find you on the internet?
I'm at harleyrotbart.com. That's tough to remember, but if you instead just search No Regrets Parenting, that's kind of a bumper sticker that I've gone by for the last number of years. NoRegretsParenting.com, and you'll find me.
Perfect. What about you, Ken?
I am not sophisticated enough to have my own website. I'm No Harley Rotbart, but I am all over social media, Ken Davidoff, Twitter, X, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, Threads, Instagram, and Facebook. So I am all over social media.
Perfect. And for those of you in the car or the batting cage, we got you covered. Everything Dr. Harley and Ken Davidoff will have links in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com, so you can check that out and learn more. Gentlemen, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Daily Helping.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And to each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to this conversation, thank you as well. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to go grab this book, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.